2020 is a critical election year for the party.
But freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction.
America will never be a socialist country.
The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same.
We are born free and we will stay free.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 20 for 20, a very special episode as we kick off impeachment week. I am here with Kevin McLaughlin.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
How are you, pal?
This is exciting.
I'm very excited to be here. It's always exciting to be back, especially during impeachment week.
It's quite a time on Capitol Hill.
You know, because it's impeachment, because we're going to do things a little bit differently, our members are tied up with doing their constitutional duty. We're going to throw a little curveball. Mm-hmm. And we're going to audible, if you will.
We're going to audible.
Now, listen, our guest today does not know what an audible is because she's not a big sports fan.
Not a sports girl.
She's not a sports person. She's got a lot of gifts. Ton of gifts, but
sports.
Not sports. Yes. We got Betsy Ankeny here, our political director, the woman who is single-handedly going to hold the majority of the United States Senate.
That's what I'm telling
all the press to make sure that I got a scapegoat. But she's with us today.
It's very exciting. Betsy can give us some unique insight into the politics around both impeachment and just the political dynamics all over the country right now. So we are so happy to have Betsy with us.
For purposes of background, for those of you who don't know Betsy, Betsy's an amazing individual. She's from the great city of Toledo, Ohio.
Great city.
Yes, a beautiful great place. City. The president was just there. You didn't
yes,
go,
he
but
was.
You wanted to.
Yeah, I did.
Turn the town upside down.
Yeah.
She ran Ron Johnson's reelect in 2016. She ran Bruce Rauner's reelect in 2018. She's worked at the RNC.
I'm happy to be here, and I just want to say you two look adorable in your matching vests. And I kind
of
feel left out.
You could have stopped at you two look adorable.
Yeah.
First of all.
They would have gotten
we can
it.
Cut
they
that,
would have
right?
gotten
No.
Yeah.
No.
We are in matching vests for the listeners, and it wasn't planned. It just happened.
We fancy ourselves like Wall Street guys around here.
It's
we
all like have an Orvis catalog over
it's
here.
It's pretty
Yeah. Very rugged.
Like Eddie Bauer.
Orvis catalog.
Yeah. It's great.
Yep. We need to ask some of the who would you rather have in the Senate.
Sure.
Oh.
Because I think
okay.
Tillis's answers on that were fantastic.
Yeah. I like this game. Yeah.
So first,
okay.
Michael Scott or Leslie Knope?
Michael Scott.
Yeah.
For the
no
same
brainer.
Reasons. Okay.
Yeah.
I do think Leslie would be a diligent senator, but.
Yeah. You know, she probably would be a better senator.
She would.
Michael Scott would be a lot more fun.
Yeah.
And
be
much
a lot
more entertaining.
More fun.
Yeah.
He'd be
Absolutely.
Great on the podcast.
Listen, I think that some of our senators are going to get a little upset about it, but I think that we already have a few Michael Scotts in the Senate. We won't name who they are.
It's not a bad thing, as we just discussed.
On both sides.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
There are a few Michael Scotts in there.
What about the other one's good as Dwight Schrute or Ron Swanson?
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's a good one.
That's a challenge.
Right?
I'd like to have both of them.
I would too.
Can we have a special election? It's like Georgia. It's our own little Georgia.
Yeah. I feel like he's like assistant to the senator.
Yeah. He'd be a
and
great.
So we're going to have Ron Swanson as the senator.
Yeah.
And then Dwight will be assistant.
Smart.
To the senator.
Smart. Love that.
Smart.
Maybe
I
he'll get
it.
Promoted to assistant Absolutely. Senator. We don't know.
You never know. But yeah, Ron Swanson's kind of an odd, like, libertarian, conservative. Ideologically, I don't know where he fits, but he'd be a fun guy to have around.
Yeah.
Go out and get breakfast with
get
him.
Bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the bacon in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the
I would like all the eggs and bacon that you have.
The other question that we asked Senator Tillis that I think was fun is whether you think Washington is more like the West Wing, House of Cards, or Veep?
Ooh, Veep.
Yeah.
I think
For
everybody
sure.
who's seen this place behind the scenes gets there. Everyone comes here thinking it's going to be the West Wing.
Yeah.
Everyone's parents at home are worried that it's House of Cards.
Yeah.
When you get here, it is Veep.
Yeah.
When you get here, it's Veep. That's the
well,
thing.
Well, there was that, that there was some like meme before that was like what I think I do.
Uh-huh.
And it was the West Wing. What my parents think I do. Yeah. House of Cards.
Exactly.
What I really do. And it's Veep.
Stand behind a member of Congress whispering in their ear, this is so-and-so. Don't say this thing. Don't say this thing.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere. I've been a gay for multiple senators.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
I also feel like in that same vein, who's the Catherine Hahn, the woman who plays the campaign manager on Parks and Rec?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I love her.
Yeah.
I love her.
And who has
And I feel
had...
like that's actually pretty accurate, too.
Honestly, that's pretty, that, like, that's Betsy.
Yeah, it is.
That's
I agree.
Betsy.
100%.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm
do whatever
it
takes to
Natalie.
Win.
Yeah.
Shiv somebody.
Just take over the diner.
Yeah
absolutely.
Yeah.
And she's a great character.
She's great.
Great character.
I love it.
What do the people need to know about you that we don't know? You went to Vanderbilt.
I did.
Oh.
I went to Vanderbilt.
Anchor down.
Anchor down, yeah.
I always tell Ward Ashley Baker, the former political director and executive director here, that Vanderbilt has the nicest high school football stadium I've ever seen in college.
We're the redheaded stepchild of the SEC.
Yes, you are.
That's okay.
But you're
But you're
proud
of it.
We're really good at tailgating.
Oh, are you?
We had a great time.
Got a good baseball team.
Yeah. I actually, it was really confusing. So I'm from Toledo, Ohio, which is sort of the hotbed of the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. And although, as you pointed out, I'm not a huge sports fan, when I first got to Vanderbilt, people started talking. They were like, so what are you going to wear to the game on Saturday? And I was like, I don't know. I just got a Vandy t-shirt at the bookstore. Like, I'm ready to go. And they were like, oh, no, Betsy. Like, you need to wear a sundress. And I was like,
a sundress?
I don't understand what that means.
Well, and for those who know Betsy, that will be funny because Betsy is a has a very unique style.
She knows come in black.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Betsy wears a lot of black, which she rocks.
She's the woman in black.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt colors are black and gold. So
perfect. Worked out well for you.
It worked out well. Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about Toledo? Now, Toledo, Toledo is like, to your point, if the people don't know, it was fought over or something, right? It was a part of Michigan.
Yes, it was once a part of Michigan. I believe war in 1826. Okay. I believe I have my facts straight.
Between
there.
Michigan and Ohio?
Between Michigan and Ohio. Ohio won us in an epic battle.
Oh.
I think you guys have some interesting history.
Well,
yeah,
there is.
We do, yeah.
You know, Minnesota committed the first troops to the Civil War.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Did not know that.
Yeah, we weren't even a state.
Also, the home of hot dishes.
And we have hot dishes
which we were
there.
Discussing earlier.
I don't
for
even know
those
that
of you,
word
for the,
is.
The uninitiated, hot dish is a casserole.
Yeah.
Oh,
we call it hot dish.
Yeah. And when I lived in St. Paul, Minnesota for the convention in 2008, there was this big winter festival, and someone was like, let's go to the hot dish tent.
The
and I was like,
wow.
I was like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds fantastic.
It does, right? And they are delicious. Like, you have tater tot hot dish.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just delicious.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's like tater tots with a bunch of sour cream and gunk and like everyone's arteries are clogged.
That's incredible.
It's
really, really delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's awfully exciting.
That's good stuff.
I think we do need to talk about a little business, though.
Okay.
Because there's serious things going on around
That's
here.
Fair. We can do that.
It is the day. So today is the day that impeachment is really officially kicking off in the Senate. We had ceremonial processes last week. Everyone was sworn in. The Chief Justice arrived. There was the long, slow walk where House members brought the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. Some people put music to that. Someone put the Star Wars Imperial March to it. I thought that made sense.
Yeah.
That made sense. But what's going
to
happen today?
I pay Matt to do this, by the way. He's outlining his job description for everyone.
Someone may have put Star Wars music to something.
I don't know. It just like seemed like a good idea. Yeah. Like it went viral. No, like I have a few good friends on Twitter who had a lot of fun with that. But today is a little bit more serious because at 1 o'clock, the hearings are actually going to begin. One of the first things they're going to do is set rules for how the arguments will be made, what time they'll be made in, and when senators can start asking for witnesses and things like that. Now, one thing that I want to point out is the Senate hearing is not going to be like the House hearing. It's going to be slow. It's going to be a little bit sterile. It's going to be long, and it's not going to have the fireworks that I think a lot of people are hoping for or expecting. Once the arguments are made, the managers will take questions about them, but it's not going to be fiery debate questions. They're submitting their questions on paper through the Chief Justice. And so if you're tuning in, wanting fireworks, wanting, you know, big answers, wanting this sort of To Kill a Mockingbird trial.
You can't handle the truth.
It's not going to be that.
Right.
And I think that might be disappointing to people, but this is a part of why impeachment has really lost steam.
Mm-hmm.
The House has watched this dwindle in popularity. And one thing I'm excited to hear from Betsy about is why and the numbers sort of behind that.
Yeah. So it's actually really interesting. When the House first sort of started this process back in October, when we looked across, you know, some national surveys, I believe the average was 50% support impeachment, 45% oppose. Today, that's dead even. And I think it's in large part because the House was such a circus. It was such a charade. And I think people kind of caught on to that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we've seen, too, is that across the board, people feel like Congress should be focused on things other than impeachment.
Right. Totally.
You know, we did some, you know, we've seen some numbers lately and across some battleground states, 62% of voters say that Congress should be focused on things like lowering health care costs and keeping the economy on track instead of impeachment, including 63% of independents and 61% of women.
Those seem like high numbers.
They do seem like high numbers. They
Not
do seem like
things.
High numbers.
Let me ask you a question. As an expert in political campaigns, how often do you see things in this day and age in the 60s?
Not too often.
Very rare.
Things are very polarized.
Yeah.
Kevin, why do you think that is based on what you've seen in the House and Senate?
Well, you know, I think actually it's kind of interesting when you talk to people, and, you know, Betsy and I travel a lot, and you talk to a lot of different people across the country, and almost to a person, when you get outside of D.C. and talk to a person, they always say it confirms all of their worst instincts or beliefs, what they believe is happening in Washington. Yeah. They think that Washington, you know, out of touch and like focused on the wrong thing and like only out for themselves. And like you see it on display every day on CNN or C-SPAN or wherever they're getting their news from. And I think it just confirms for them, like, these guys are out of touch. They have no idea what's going on. And I think it's a cautionary tale for Republicans. I don't think it helps anyone, right? I mean, like, it loses faith in the institutions. And I think that's the biggest crime here. I'm sorry, that's over the top. But like the biggest bummer here is that like it's further eroded confidence in our institution, obviously Congress here in this case. And you know, we don't need that anymore. Like people out there are concerned about, you know, paying for college or paying for their mortgage or paying their rent or, you know, their car loan or just keeping their job. And like people are largely happy. I mean, the economy is booming and like anyone you talk to is like they're feeling it. And yeah, maybe not every demo is like saying, oh, yeah, I'm perfect. Things are great. But they're certainly better off than they were 3 years ago.
Right. And I think that people, you know, in those same surveys, 68% of voters said that impeachment's all about politics. They don't think that it's about the rule of law. They don't think that it's about doing what's the right thing for the country. Mm-hmm. Like, people see that it's all about politics. And I think to Kevin's point, you know, one of the things that we've seen across the board back in focus groups even earlier this year over the summer and early fall is that while people generally think that the country's doing well, the economy's booming, they are feeling all of those effects, like the number one thing that they say is that there's too much uncertainty. There's so much squabbling in D.C. Mm-hmm. There's so much partisan infighting. And I think this and the way the Democrats handle things in the House just feeds into that.
Another parallel here, by the way, is that, you know, I think one of the big things we've seen in polling throughout the last year or so is on Medicare for All and anything with health care. Mm-hmm. People are really, really leery, regardless of how they feel about Medicare for All, right? I'm not making that argument at all, but people are very leery about federal government getting involved in anything. They just don't have belief. They don't have faith in the institution to be able to do it.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think as you sit here and they watch this, we see that in that policy situation. And they're looking at the TV going, see, why I don't want them. They're ruining everything.
Well, I think that one really important point, and it goes to the points that you both just made, is people have outrage fatigue.
Yeah.
They had the Mueller investigation for multiple years. Now we've moved into impeachment. We've been dialed up to 11 since the time the president was elected.
Yeah.
And there was a headline, the day of inauguration, the campaign to impeach President Trump begins. A lot of people
in the Washington
out there,
Post. It wasn't
a liberal paper. Right. It was the Washington Post. And people feel that. When you talk to people outside of Washington, D.C., at some point this all blends together as just a consistent outrage. And it's, you know, it's the media, it's elected officials on TV, dialing it up to 11 for every little thing that's happened, and now people are worn out.
Well, and I think, you know, to your point on the fact that people don't necessarily trust the government and trust institutions anymore, they also don't trust the media. And we saw just yesterday, you know, Martha McSally was approached in the hallway by a reporter. She sort of dismissed him and said, I'm not talking to you, you're a liberal hack. And the media outrage was out of control.
Right.
Like, you know, people were just giving themselves a nosebleed over the fact that, you know, she just called a reporter a liberal hack. And normal people sitting at home are like, yeah, I don't like reporters either. I don't trust the news.
Yeah.
Now, you can argue whether or not that's a good thing for our country, but that is the current state that we're in.
Yeah. Are the numbers that you're seeing, this is across states,
this is
right?
across this is multiple state. Battleground
this is not, this
states.
Is, yeah, this is not like just is not
yeah.
just you know.
This is not just like a national RCP average. Right. These are, you know, individual polls across multiple.
And they're purple
states,
blue states,
purple
red
states.
States
yep.
The states
kinds of
we are focused
Absolutely.
On for our senators are really seeing this grounds shift in impeachment, and I think a big part of that, and we can get into this just a little bit, is this delayed process. It's all these other factors. It's years of outrage, but it's also the fact that impeachment happened, you know, now about a month ago, and it's been drawn out. And maybe that was Nancy Pelosi's tactic, but I think people have really lost interest.
Well, and strong majorities in all those states say let us decide.
Yeah,
in November.
I was just gonna say. I mean, now that we're in an election year, because this has dragged out for so long, 58% of voters say we should wait until the ballot box in November, including 59% of independents.
Yeah. We're 10 months before
people
voting.
People are over this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there is one theory as to why Nancy Pelosi waited, and it has to do with the presidential election.
Yes,
Kevin,
it does.
We've heard this now from a lot of, the president said it just on Friday in the White House. A lot of other people have speculated the same way.
Kevin, I wouldn't be surprised to help Joe Biden.
Yeah.
You know, to keep... Elizabeth
Lizzie
Warren
and
Bernie in the Senate before the Iowa caucuses. And, like, I mean, it's hard to argue with.
It is hard to argue.
Because, like, they didn't need to do this.
There's no other strategic reason I can possibly think of behind her dragging this out the way she did.
Yeah.
She got nothing out of it except for hurting Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And we've seen for years now the Democrat establishment has tried to keep Bernie from ever getting too much steam.
Yep.
And here we are. They're keeping him out of these two early states.
Yeah. And he just came out yesterday. He was asked directly about it. And he was like, yeah, of course I would rather be in Iowa campaigning than dealing with this.
Like, dealing with impeachment.
Yeah. And I think that you will see some backlash to that, particularly because of what happened last time in the presidential.
Yep.
You know, a lot of these Bernie supporters, like, they've seen this playbook before.
Yep.
Right.
And now there are more of them.
Yeah.
Bernie's got more ahead of his steam right now than he had in 16, in part because they think, you know, Biden is another Hillary-type candidate that might not drive the energy.
Right.
And they're trying to do it again to Bernie. It's...
Yeah. And putting impeachment aside, 2020, you're in charge of this whole thing.
Yep.
It's on your shoulders. It's your responsibility to hold the majority. Yours and yours alone. Solely on your shoulders.
That.
And I think you are uniquely qualified to be the only person responsible whatsoever for what the outcome might be come November.
It's on you, Betsy.
But yeah.
We'll let you guys down.
Yeah, right. Thanks. Well, so what? Give us a 1 minute kind of like lay of the land on how things look on 2020 for Senate Republicans and just the Senate in general.
So I think, you know, across the board, we're feeling pretty good about things. Control what you can control. There's a lot of volatility in this environment. There's a lot of things going on. And I think our campaigns across the board are focused on raising money, doing things that matter to the constituents in their states, and building a strong infrastructure that's going to take them through Election Day. And I also think that you see, you know, some real failures on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. There is this sort of culture of corruption that we've talked about a little bit that has particularly reared its head in Colorado with everything that Hickenlooper has gone through.
Yep.
The guy has never taken a punch before.
Slush fund.
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, you had a Democrat state senator calling it fraud.
Yep.
And then in Maine, you know, you have Sarah Gideon, who's under the fire for the same kinds of things.
Yep.
She just came out and made this whole grand gesture about how she's not going to take corporate PAC money. And, like, she got hit with an ethics investigation for doing just that.
Yep.
Like,
she's,
you know, you can't make
money.
This stuff up.
Yep.
You know, and then in North Carolina, you have a wild primary down there. Erica Smith, a progressive state senator, just came out on video and said that Chuck Schumer didn't want an African-American woman in the Senate.
Wow.
A little bit reminiscent of the whole tiff between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-hmm.
So across the board, I think, you know, you're seeing our guys doing what they need to do, raising money, building the infrastructure, focusing on what matters to the voters in their states. And you're seeing the Democrats, you know, they're raising a lot of money, but there's a lot of issues there. And I think that once these campaigns start really rolling and people start spending money, I think it's going to be pretty telling. And I'm excited about what we can do.
Yep.
And one thing that we like to come back to is just pointing out the fact that our class of senators who are up right now are the rock stars.
Yep.
Susan Collins is one of the most prolific legislators in the history of both Maine and this country, and she's the most bipartisan senator in history, top one or two all time, by every objective measure. Tom Tillis, incredibly successful senator. Cory Gardner, always top five most bipartisan members of the Senate, passes some of the most important bills that Colorado's ever seen. So lots of reasons for Republicans to feel optimistic.
You know, and I also just want to mention, we have a lot of kick-ass women who are up.
Yep.
We have Martha McSally in Arizona, who, as we just saw yesterday, don't mess with her.
Yep.
We have Joni Ernst, who's just hustling all over Iowa. Like, you know, that woman has so much energy.
Right.
Susan Collins, just such a force of nature up in Maine.
Juggernaut.
Now we have Kelly Loeffler down in Georgia, yep. who we're very excited about. Yep. Shelley Moore Capito's up. So there's, you know, Cindy Hyde Smith. We have a ton of great female senators, yeah. and a lot of them are up, and it's really important that we make sure that they are successful.
Amen. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. And we're lucky to have a kick-ass woman in charge and winning and holding this majority.
We are.
Betsy Ankeny, thank you for joining us on 20
thank
for 20.
You guys.
Delight. Thank you for being here at the NRSC.
Next week, we're looking to have another special guest. We don't want to reveal who that will be yet, but it will be someone very exciting. And you can hear that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Ricochet Network, and wherever podcasts are heard. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next week. For 20 is paid for by the NRSC, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee, nrsc.org.